So welcome to this very, very last session. I should have announced that everything that I will be saying today will be very relevant for the final examination. So this is a lesson for me for the next time that I will be holding this class. We have looked at all the immatriculation numbers of the students who have submitted essays. There are a couple, about six, who have only handed in one essay, but who simultaneously are on the list for those who will take the examination. We will write to these six people because they are officially not allowed to take part in the examination. It's also better for them because they would get a 5 and then they would need sometimes another chance, but this would then be next year. So they have two other possibilities next year or in another class. This is just for your information. I will also go to the evaluations of the class in the end of what I will be doing today. Are there any questions? If not, then let's briefly summarize what this class was about, at least the first textbook. So in this class, world politics, international politics is perceived as a strategic interaction. So you have to look at interests, also at information level levels of actors and their strategic interactions and how these interactions are shaped by institutions. Again, what are institutions? Besides, let's say, the United Nations or the European Union. These are mainly rules, so it matters whether a decision-making body, a committee, decides by majority voting or by unanimity, whether you have certain legislative procedures enacted and so on. So this is very relevant for this class, but obviously also for your general understanding. Okay. In the last chapter of the Frieden, Lake and Schulz textbook, there are a couple of forecasts and evaluations made on topics that they consider to be highly important. So now, since we were in a semester where nuclear politics played a big role, so what is your assessment? What will be the role of nuclear politics in the years to come? Will this increase the risk that we will experience another kind of major war or even bigger dangers, or do they have a stabilizing force? Okay, so we will have more proliferation. That's your expectation. So we will have more official and unofficial nuclear powers. Just recall that Israel has nuclear weapons and is some sort of irregular nuclear state. So there will be more proliferation. Will this make the world necessarily more insecure? Okay, and what is necessary for nuclear deterrence to work? So you might have mutually assured deterrence at the regional level between Iraq and Israel, and these kind of considerations are very important because then you might have a lower risk that conventional wars erupt between those powers. So think about what is happening at the moment in Syria. This is all very relevant and might change with more nuclear weapons in the region. Here is just all the stuff that you might take into consideration. So what we will have most likely are further kind of Cuban or North Korean missile crisis. We are also not sure when the next North Korean missile crisis will erupt, perhaps just after the end of the current Olympics. Will be a nuclear umbrella, will this provide any security so that the United States and its allies put some kind of anti-rocket system into the sky so that potential threats are eliminated. Does such a system work, or what's the danger of such a system? So then you do not have mutually assured destruction any longer, obviously you are in the situations of the end of the 1940s, where there was technically only one nuclear power, the United States, or the end of World War II. So this creates then relatively strange incentives. What is the chance for coercive disarmament, or that some countries, like for instance Ukraine, abandon, basically sell their nuclear weapons? Is there a chance for this? Yeah, I mean, it didn't consider itself to be a major power, didn't that it cannot affect power games here. It has Russia as a neighbor, so these were all considerations. And what is really then necessary is also quite often that you have a regime change. So probably to prevent Iraq from becoming a nuclear power at some point, you need to have a leadership change in this country. At the moment, just recall which countries have abandoned their nuclear weapons programs, so which countries had aspirations to become major nuclear powers at some point. South Africa, Brazil, Argentina, but also Sweden and my own home country, Switzerland, they aspired to become nuclear weapons and to play a major role here in world politics, but these plans were abandoned in the 1960s. Okay. So another big theme is obviously the rise of China, and quite some people, especially in the United States, but also in Western Europe, somehow feel threatened by China. So what is the most likely outcome of the rise of China with regard to security policy making and the risk of conflict? Is this dangerous or is this not dangerous, based on what you have learned in this class? Okay, so what could happen is so-called power transition, and in a power transition, what kind of risk looms relatively large? What can happen in such a situation? A preemptive war might happen. What is the chance that something like that might happen? Okay, we cannot really imagine that, given the current decision-making structure, the European Union would decide in favor of a preemptive war against China. So it would be the United States. And what would this require in the United States? What kind of incentive structure? I mean, in order to understand politics, one has to sometimes think a little bit cynically. Yeah. Okay, mass support, or then a very isolated leadership who sees this as the last possibility somehow to survive, which is not completely something which I would completely then disregard as a possibility, but I believe that this is something which should also take into consideration. Now, when you think about China, in 20 or 30 years, will China be the same as a political actor? I mean, we have here all the nice projections about how rich they will be, how developed they will be, and the GDP will be larger, not necessarily the GDP per capita, but the GDP as such. And also, you see here, India will be the third player here. And what you see here also is that Germany, France, perhaps then the EU will be at the level of India in the end, or perhaps at the level of the United States, depending on how the EU evolves. So, but what could happen with China if it develops as it develops nowadays? What could you imagine? Okay, I mean, these developments are very important, but will we still have the Communist Party as the rulers of the country in 20 or 30 years? What might happen in this country at some point when GDP growth rates are at the level that they are at in Western Europe or even lower after an economic crisis. And what we might also see is a collapse of an empire. We perceive as outsiders China always as a monolithic actor, and it is actually not so as monolithic as you think. I had once a postdoc at my chair who was working for one of the universities in Beijing, and she was there an associate professor. This was one of the universities, especially for the different nationalities. So they count some dozens nationality as making part of China, and you know, in the West, the Muslim population wants to break away. Tibet is also occasionally a region of unrest. So all these projections that you see here are always based on the assumption that China will be still be this monolithic actor led by the communists. Also think about the income inequality in China, also that you have inter-regional gap of the level of development, some parts which are very rich and other ones which are not so rich. So we will not necessarily see this, and also it's not quite clear how large a role China will play on a global scale, militarily. Certainly, it will try to be the major power in the region. So this is a second consideration that plays a big role. Now, the question of the sustainability of globalization. Since this textbook was published in its third edition some years ago, many things happened against globalization, and what are the major anti-globalization events that have happened so far. I mean, it's trivial, so obviously Trump and Brexit at least. Will there be an end to this development that world trade, foreign direct investment will grow, or is this trend just can this not be stopped at all, this kind of development? So what would this mean, let's say, a new wave of protectionism? And we have the first signs with not so enlightened decisions in Washington, D.C., made against imports of, refrigerators from South Korea and stuff like that. So what would this mean then? With regard to security, policy making, with regard to the conflict potential. What will then happen is obviously that you do not see these growth effects any longer, which are linked to globalization. And this will create tensions within countries, but probably also between countries. So the risk of conflict might grow. What has also happened and what can be linked to globalization is that we see within country inequality, and not in all countries. So you see here Brazil, as the world leader of inequality, has reduced its inequality level, but it's still at a very high level. In Mexico, it has grown. In France, it has been reduced. It's probably now growing again. In Japan, it has been growing. In India, it has been growing. First, the question, and this was once covered very briefly in this class, why has worldwide inequality been reduced, at least according to Salah E. Martin? China's and India's middle class are mainly driving this, because these are very large, very populated countries, so they count then much more. But you see here that in the industrialized world, in the United States and in other countries, including Germany, inequality is growing. And this has obviously fueled then in the Western world the backlash against globalization. So what can be done to prevent this from happening further? Actually, I have at the moment a BA student who looks at the support at the voting district level for the Alternative for Germany, examining a thesis which has been propagated in the United States that Trump voters come from deprived regions where people have low life expectancy. And what she has found so far, it's not yet clear whether this is a spurious correlation, is that voting districts in Germany where male life expectancy is low have a higher vote for the AfD. So this is the same result as in the United States. So what might drive this process? So which regions are that where male life expectancy is low? In rural regions, but largely in regions which once have been industrialized and which were exposed to competition from Eastern Europe and from China. So this leads then obviously to some people, quite some people moving away, and what you have then are people who are left behind, and these are people which do not have a very good chance in their life. So they might then turn to these political alternatives. So how can one make globalization work again when you see this? Okay, and then probably subsidies for these regions to create jobs might be better solutions than just to do nothing, than to expect the bright people to move away from these regions, because the dissatisfaction will remain there. So you need some sort of new welfare policies to put this back into place. What is the chance for such a new welfare project? So it has, in some countries which are more exposed to world competition, like Scandinavia, it has played a role, but it has not yet so far reached Germany to this extent. So you need sound regional economic policies, you need new welfare policies in order to make globalization work again. So what is also affected by these trends is then global governance. So you see here just how the number of intergovernmental organizations has grown. And here you do not see then a large increase since the end of the Cold War. You also see that here people are much more relying on cell phones and so on, and especially in some countries which are not that developed. So this is a major part of economic growth, that people have cell phones so that they can also bypass inefficient bureaucracies. But what might be inevitable when you think about international organizations, here the IMF, is obviously that you will have a shift in power, so that China, India, Brazil, and some other states might be much more important. What will this mean for the kind of policies that are decided then by new international organizations where developing countries and transition economies play a much bigger role? So this might mean, in my opinion, that the liberal project, the values that are propagated by the Western nations are endangered, that there might be a focus simply on economic cooperation, not so much with regard to human rights, although in the textbook they are much more positive than I am. What will this mean for Europe and the European states and the European Union? So otherwise we might face the risk, or you might face the risk, that Europe becomes so something like the global Disney world, which is mainly used as a tourism spot, nice traveling, but no political voice. So given that, you see that there is obviously a need for collaboration at the level of the European Union. But will we have still a European Union in 20 years? Or what is your expectation on how the European Union will evolve and how it will look like? Okay, so that you might have some countries which push ahead in some domains, I'm not 100% sure whether this will then be tolerated much by the other states. You also already feel the resentment against the Franco-German axis and the dominance here. So what you might see is a strengthening of Eastern Europe, and then sometimes not so much with liberal values. So you could see a similar development as on the global scale also within Europe. Let's say that conservative or authoritarian values become much more important. Perhaps the organization will focus much more on cooperation in the domain of economics and not so much then with regard to security and foreign policy making. Will NATO be obsolete? We might also see different NATO with a diminished role for the United States, perhaps then here together with the European Union, which is might then be strengthened. So this is a lot of speculation, but certainly what you will experience over the coming years and decades is that here global governance will look very differently, and the kind of global governance that we have, where you also care about the protection of human rights in other countries, this might be something which is very precarious. Okay. This is just the summary here, and what I try to do in this class is to give you the instruments, the conceptual knowledge to analyze political problems. I mean, you can always disagree, but you need a foundation for reasoning, and that I also hoped to cover some of the main topics in international politics today. Teaching will obviously continue. In the summer, I will teach two classes. Sonja Grimm will be back. Friederike Kelle, who is substituting her this term, will go to the Science Center in Berlin as a postdoc over the next years. Just an announcement, I will be based in D.C. in the next academic year from October to the end of May as the Helmut Schmidt Fellow of the German Marshall Fund, so that I see then the details of the Trump administration and here, and I can then tell much better jokes the next time I teach this class. So the teaching in international politics will then obviously be given next fall by Dirk Leufen, Katharina Holzinger, and their collaborators. Please, if you want to have me as a supervisor for your thesis and so on, get in touch with me early on. I can also supervise via Skype, and I will also obviously supervise my doctoral students in this way. The evaluations that I receive from my classes always focus more or less on the same kind of stuff. So that if you want to join my gang, you should become a work hero, held der Arbeit. So this is a kind of medal that was handed out here for the real true heroes of work, the Stakhanovites. Who was a Stakhanovite? What did these guys do? They were used for the Soviet propaganda, but these were the guys who were producing much more than they were supposed to produce. So then they received these medals and probably died 5 minutes after that due to a heart attack. So I do not want you to join this particular club, but I mean, my expectation is always that you do a lot of reading and that you come prepared to class. If I compare the reading requirements, then it's not much more than in similar classes, and not more than in the classes that Dirk Leufen has taught here. Okay, then people also believe that I'm somehow a little bit too Prussian, although I'm obviously not Prussian by origin, and that I'm a little bit too dogmatic, that I'm this rational choice lunatic. This is all true. I cannot change this. I mean, I also always believe it's better to give you a perspective instead of saying that let's 1,000 flowers bloom and in the end you will not know nothing, because you cannot then really grasp and also criticize the perspective that is propagated by the teacher of your particular class. Then there were some more detailed criticism, which had to do with the slides. Some people criticized that there was too much text on the slide. Other ones criticized that there was too little text on the slides. This reminds me of the criticism that I received when I started here teaching 23 years ago. Then I was dressing as a young professor in a much more colorful way. So people said, under the positive points, the dress code of Schneider, this is something I like very much. But then they also said simultaneously, okay, this is too colorful. Now I'm part of the establishment, you've seen. I will become the Helmut Schmidt Fellow, so I dress like you would expect from a gray-haired person. So the criticism now focuses on the stuff you might criticize. It focuses on the slides and how much text it contains. My expectation isn't focus on the main conceptual knowledge, and you should learn for this and for the examination, but obviously also for your understanding of politics in general. So I hope that you do not only learn for the final examination, and all the slides with some results from some studies, they are just an additional material. My goal is to help you to learn. It is not always clear on whether student evaluation assess how much people are learning, so they might assess then different criteria. Last fall, there was a meta-evaluation, the most encompassing evaluation of teaching evaluations, where they try to uncover whether there is a relationship between the teaching evaluations and the learning effect, whether people were really learning something. And when they took all the studies that have been published on this topic, they've shown that teaching evaluations have nothing to do with the learning effect. So I hope that you have learned here something. If you did not learn anything, then you obviously can tell me and should tell me now, so that I can focus in my next teaching of this class a little bit more. So now I would like to give you the voice to raise certain points. I will afterwards go drink a coffee, so you can also engage into a bilateral exchange with me. I'm married since 29 years and have two young adults as children, so I'm exposed to criticism on a daily basis. I can live with that, so believe me. I have also critical tutors who would tell me everything that they find disturbing. What I do not really then like, that's also something to do when I publish, for instance, an article on asylum policy making, then you receive this anonymous comments on the blocks of the newspapers where you publish this stuff, and then the most harmless comments are that Schneider is a good mensch, and there are then some other stuff. So I do not discuss then about anonymous stuff or, let's say, details. I apologize. There was one person who said that some of the videos did not work out well. I apologize for that, that Schneider had some difficulties early morning with here putting on the screen and showing then the videos on time. So I hope you can live with these technical details occasionally. Okay, so now the floor is yours. What do you want to criticize? If not, then I hope to see you back in study. The life does not end with this class, so it will continue. So the end is near, you wish. So I wish you good luck with your future studies, and I hope that in the long run, when you look back at this class, I hope that you remember this as a class where you have learned something, where you have become a better citizen, a better mensch. Thank you.